Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I am Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diament.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you today, Rob?
Today, Russell, I am feeling romantic.
Oh, okay.
And why? I mean romantic in the sense of self-expression and individualism and an emphasis on emotion. And that is my favorite thing in the whole wide world, and especially within art, because I think romantic artists are the best. And I think people sometimes get it confused with like sentimentality, but actually when something's romantic, I think it's so genius. And today's guest is, in my eyes, a romantic artist. And actually, in the exhibition notes of their recent exhibition at Violmetta, which is an amazing gallery in Los Angeles, it's one of the funniest texts I'd ever read, like, you know, for an exhibition. I just thought it was so genius. It was actually written by a writer called Sarah Nicole Prickett. And it talked about an issue with their accountant. The artist has an accountant.
I love this story.
And she phoned her accountant basically saying, why can't you make the bedroom as well as the studio, including like the bed, the mattress, a tax deductible kind of space, you know, for their accounts? And the accountant just laughed and thought it was a joke. And then the guest actually fired the accountant because that's the kind of artist they are. And I love this. I'm so excited because I agree with her. And I think, you know, being an artist is not just being in a studio with a canvas. It's about thinking. It's about big ideas. It's about expressing yourself everywhere that you are, the air you breathe, the ground you walk on. It's all part of art. So that's just one tiny little sort of...
Doesn't sound that tiny. That sounds
anecdote.
That's like a big, big idea.
Well, you know me, very dramatic. So we would like to welcome to Talk Art all the way from, I think, a seaport in New York, which I never even knew was there, but I'm loving this. We might hear about some stories of the seaport. All the way from New York, Nash Glynn. Hi, Nash.
Hello, boys.
How are you?
Good. Yes, greetings from the seaport, the South Street seaport here in Manhattan.
So I read that your studio was in Greenpoint in Brooklyn. So you've moved from there.
It was once. Yes, I moved last January to a loft in the South Street seaport. And yeah, I'm home.
You feel home there? You feel like this is where you're meant to be?
Oh, yes, I do well in the seaport.
What do you mean you do well, like with all the sailors?
Yes, exactly. You know, all the drunken sailors at the pub downstairs. It's quite a scene.
That's great. So why was the move from Brooklyn to Manhattan important for you?
Well, I needed space, and I happened to find some here. I found a good old-fashioned loft, which I then discovered once belonged to an academic called Sylvain Lautinger. I don't know if you know. I didn't know who he was until I found this, but he started Semiotext.
What's that?
The publishing company, uh-huh. Semiotext.
I don't know that.
They translated a lot of like French theory back in the day into English, including like Baudrillard, who did like this simulacrum, you know, which is the reason why we have things like The Matrix. And yeah, he was lovers with the artist Kathy Acker. And yeah, there was some film shot here. And anyway, there's a whole history to the town, and I'm discovering more and more every day.
Do you feel his, do you feel his energy there? Is it inspiring to you, knowing?
Oh
this?
Yes, yes, it's inspiring indeed. yeah, I've heard some juicy stories about things that took place here back in the day. Yes.
And you're just you're continuing that lineage now yourself.
I do my best, you know.
You mentioned that last night you had a load of friends over, but you made them leave early because you had to record the podcast. Are you throwing like big parties at the studio or?
Oh, it was just a small gathering of, you know, some of the dolls about town.
It wasn't that small. It was 10 of you, wasn't it?
That's small for a Saturday night at my house.
Love.
They always seem to find their way here.
That's nice. So having a big space for you, does that equate to be able to create bigger work or more work?
Yes.
Or yeah,
yes.
How do you work in a bigger space then?
You know, it's funny. I've, since coming here, I've been playing with scale quite a bit in my paintings. And, you know, while the canvases have gotten bigger, you know, the subjects have kind of remained the same, which has been a lot of fun to play with. And they've been, you know, things that I've been dreaming of for quite a while, which is why I needed the space. I mean, you could say the work has become in a lot of ways about space.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think, you know, well, let's go back to like what the fundamental is of your practice, and self-portraiture is incredibly important. That's what we're seeing when we see a Nash Glynn work. We're seeing yourself depicted within an interior or within a landscape, but it is always, you're always drawing on yourself.
Yes, I'm definitely my own muse. It's become, it is a lot about, you know, it's mostly self-portraiture, but, you know, in a lot of ways, it's about alienation. And you could say not so much, you know, the alienation of being trans or which does come up quite a bit, but you know, maybe the alienation of having identity at all, and the way that, you know, the space in between things is kind of as definitive as the thing itself. And that's something I've been really playing with, you know, this idea of that there is no negative space.
So you mean this, if we're looking at one of these, especially this, you had a show, Interiors, that's a Vilmeta,
yes,
as we said, in LA,
yes,
at the moment, and there is a lot of negative space we would see because it's quite
so that's what everyone kept saying, but you know, I would reply, actually there is no negative space.
So that for you, so the blankness within these works, you don't see as an empty space, you see that as being full up.
I mean, that's my wish, I suppose, you know, but that's also was kind of the problem I ran into LA. You know, I still haven't decided if the show was a breakthrough or a complete failure because, it's been received with a bit of skepticism and some suspicion. Yeah, you know, people keep saying, yes, there's a lot of negative space, but, you know.
But a negative space in a negative way for them.
Guess. I'm like, it depends on how you look at it. Yes.
I know. Yeah, I love the openness of them. So what does that do for you then when you get this sort of reaction, a mixed reaction to something you're trying? Does that then paralyze you, or do you feel like you
it makes me want to do it more? Yes.
Right.
Yes, you know, I'm like, the easiest way to get me to do something is to tell me not to. So my whole life I've been doing what people tell me not to do, so you know, it's gotten me this far. So.
When did you start drawing yourself?
Always. Yes, you know, you could say my parents' home in Florida is like my childhood hall of mirrors. Yeah, there's a lot. Since for as long as I can remember, since I did that whole the mirror stage thing.
What's that?
You've heard of it?
No.
Yes, it's the Lacanian, the mirror stage. I mean, personally, I think it's you know, the mirror stage never really ends, but it's this idea of like, you know, when the child's like becomes kind of obsessed with his or her reflection, because it allows them kind of a sense of control where they have a kind of lack of control in their bodies. So it's like I lift my arm and the figure in the mirror lifts the arm. Like it's kind of the same. Anyway, yeah.
No, I love that. So then you and
always
then you would,
loved the mirror.
And then you would draw yourself, to say you lifted your arm, would you then sort of paint or draw yourself as a kid in that position?
Sure, yeah, there's a few positions. Yes, there's lots of different positions, you know, and I'm still doing the same thing, really. You know, it's always, yeah, there's a lot of choreography, you know, and body language. And
I always remember being a kid in Polaroid cameras and taking photos, you know, on old films, because I was really into, I dreamt as a kid of being a pop star the whole time. And I would often like stage photo shoots with my neighbors, you know, people my own age at kids as we were growing up. We used to do a lot of photography. Was that also something that you would do, like taking portraits of yourself in that way?
Yeah, well, I mean, Polaroid cameras might have been a bit before my time, but they are making a comeback.
They are,
it seems. not so much pictures, but lots of drawings and paintings, some collages even.
So you grew up in Miami, Florida. As a kid, you were introduced to art via your dad, who was a set designer or a prop master.
Yes, the Prop Master. Actually, that was the name of his company was Prop Masters. And he built Prop Masters, Inc. Miami. He built sets for different television and music videos and theater. And yeah, I was working at his shop from a very young age, probably too young, according to like, you know, maybe some laws. but yes, while my brothers were sent to do construction, I was always sent to the other woman in the shop in Scenic. And that's where I was first began interacting with paint and was being taught, you know, different tricks of the trade. And in some ways, you know, I think that still comes up in a lot of ways. You know, I think I do kind of think about the paintings as props almost for a kind of set that is this sort of social sphere.
Yeah, feel scenic, like you're saying about scenic backgrounds. That paintings we see of your work, your self-portrait is existing within a landscape, which would be the backdrop for you know, a TV set or the horizon in the distance. You feel this kind of scale of landscape. And this is obviously something you must have picked up at that time, that skill set, but also the imagery for that has continued through your practice now.
Yeah, no, I had to do lots of clouds and that sort of thing, although it's a very different kind of way of being when I'm, you know, here in the studio as opposed to if I take a job doing scenic. It's hard to describe, but I guess it's a lot more intuitive, you know, here, and there's a lot more play, in action.
How often are you in your studio?
Every day.
Every day, like 7 days a week?
Yes, well, I live, my studio is in my home as well.
Wow.
but I am also, I do usually work every day.
So is that something as well you were looking for when you bought a studio, that you wanted a live-work experience? And you like to be around your work? That's something you do. So is it hard then to sell them, like if they're things that you like having around?
I mean, that's always, you know, a thing where it's, giving them away, you know, these objects that I've spent so much time with. And, you know, it's such a funny thing where, you know, here's this thing that I've spent so many hours with, that I've touched, that has my, you know, sort of breath in it. And then, you know, it's no longer mine and I can't touch it anymore. And I can't, But I think every artist has some of that.
There's an amazing quote that you said there's lots of amazing quotes I'm going to pull out about that you've said that have really made me go, whoa, like stopped in my tracks. But one of these things you said is about, once work is on the walls of a gallery, it slips into the past. And that really made me reconsider everything, because, you know, it's about being in the moment. And you think that when you put a gallery show on, like the show you've got on now, when that show's finished, it goes into the past, your past exhibitions, your past shows.
Yeah.
And you have, and it's like, I don't know, it just really made me consider what the life of an artist. And I guess, you know, it's the same for me being an actor. You make something, it goes on TV, then it's like your past shows, your past CV. So there's this never-ending quest for the next. the new.
Yes. Yes. Well, it's a funny thing, you know, I think in the beginning, you know, I thought the thrill that I was seeking was in the exhibiting, but now having exhibited a few times, you know, I've realized that the thrill is actually here in the making, yeah, in the studio, you know, and that's what I'm searching for.
One of my favorite works in the show that you just had was actually called Facade, and it's of a window. Yes. And there was another work of a doorway, which was like a closed door. Can you speak a bit about those paintings where the figure might not actually be there, but I feel like your presence is still very felt?
Sure. Well, you know, there's always the implication, but it's funny, I get a few times when people see that painting of specifically the closed door, they ask, you know, what's behind the door? And I always say the back of the canvas. that was kind of the idea there. Maybe it's all facade.
You know, this prop master thing, it's a bit like Truman Show. In some ways, it's, you're using the device of the canvas as the wall of the world in which you're inhabiting within the vista of the image we're looking at. There's all these kind of elements come into play, which is very smart. You know, in some ways.
Oh, it's like, thank you. Yeah. You know, yes, she walks and she talks. you know, not just a pretty face.
well, can we talk
but
about...
Yes, you know.
Can we talk about the actual themes then that run through the practice? There's this character this of you, but it's kind of like a Mother Earth character, but you've given them another name. And the environment that you exist in, you're very... active in using these images as a way of speaking about environmental politics and geological issues and obviously climate change and how the interior of the body also reflects the exterior of the world, the landscape. There's all these lots of themes going in. And what you look at quite, you know, they could come across as quite a simple image of a female figure in a landscape. And you're like, okay, but it has so many layers to it.
Well, you know, I mean, it's always kind of that play between the interiors and the exteriors in the paintings. And it's kind of that sense of, you know, what does it mean to be in a body or in a biosphere for that matter, or a landscape, you know? And I think a part of the work is this idea that kind of inside-outside manifold, I believe, kind of sustains rituals of exclusion at the heart of, you know, maybe our global crisis that we find ourselves in. And, you know, it's like this sense that, you know, if there's an inside and an outside, like that you throw away your trash and it goes away. Like, you know, there is no outside really, or I guess that's kind of something I'm playing with.
Does that keep you like awake at night?
There's a lot of things that keep me awake at night.
It's quite an existential,
one of them.
Existential, you know, but it's one that we are all having and should be having because of the state of the world politically and geologically. But it is quite an existential idea that you channel into your work.
Yes, you know, I mean, I can get a bit existential at times, but when you really think about these things, they're actually very simple. It's like, I guess part of the work kind of abolishes this idea that there is an outside. It can be applied to so many problems, the institutions, the environmental crisis.
Do you feel like making work then is your way of showing activism for this or showing existence of you know, a female body or... the state of the world? What is the drive for you to make work?
Sure. I mean, I wouldn't dare call myself an activist, you know, I think that takes a lot more work, but you know, I do, I guess, have a wish. Yes. I don't know. The wish would be to maybe touch people through my work and, you know, maybe, I don't know, change some minds, maybe makes people feel something. I don't know, change the way we think about these things, you know? And then again, it's also, yes, I have a lot of ideas that are more kind of political, or, but at the same time, you know, I think I'm also really just searching for a feeling But also, I guess these things are not mutually exclusive.
Searching for a feeling, as in a feeling of satisfaction with the work, or a feeling of calmness within the world, or...
No, I don't know. Maybe just feeling alive, I guess, and hoping to give that to people. I don't know, that can evoke some sort of change.
But you must have been a lifeline. You must have had people reach out to you at various points and connect and say how important your work is, because also the representation of your body and yourself is, when it comes to representation within art, is rare. You know, we don't see images like this, and we should be seeing more. And what you are doing is a lifeline. And there's an incredible interview that you did with Gay Letter, and I want to read out something you said in that, which again stopped me in my tracks. And you said, "For me, this is what I've been doing. For me, the figure allows me to see my body as a precious art object that is not disposable, not erasable. Walking down the street, being visibly transgender can be life-threatening. I am celebrating this visibility by painting it because I have to. Being visible for me also means that I'm alive. I have this fantasy that may be a bit naive, that representation will make me safer in public. If these paintings are seen and are validated in a sense by the market and are able to function within the market, then I will hopefully be able to function walking down the street." And that, I mean, I feel quite emotional reading that. When I read that, I felt very emotional, that is an incredible kind of manifesto for yourself. And, you know, the way the art market works and the way that representation works, and the way we've seen it recently with a lot of queer artists, artists of color, that when the market celebrates them, the market does something, then representation changes. And it's a very kind of shallow way of representation happening, but you are having that effect, because the art market is very, very interested in Nash Glynn.
Yes, and it is indeed. But, you know, that quote, that was a while ago. Things have changed since then, I have to say. I think things definitely started out with a kind of a need to have some sort of reflection in this canon that I've spent so much time in and studying and you know, admiring. Yeah, things have changed in the sense, I guess, that I would hope that there's also more interesting things happening in the work than just the fact that I'm a woman, because, you know, it's actually quite mundane. But at the same time, you know, of course, that's a part of the work. And you know, it's something, as the market has taken more interest, I've begun to struggle with in a different sense, because I wonder, will there be a point, like, will I ever get to be an artist, or will I always be a trans painter? And maybe I'll clearly have lots of interests, but, you know, I would hope that I can also address some maybe more fundamental issues like time and space or something. And
then, you had an amazing theory, you know, you also said, is that only straight white men get to be artists. Everyone else is a trans artist, is a queer artist, is a female artist, is an artist of color, but we never say this is a white straight male artist making this work. They are the, you know, the patriarchy has made them the artist, and everyone else is othered around them.
It's a funny, it's a strange time we live in too, you know, where I also, you know, so then with this latest show, you know, I tried to sort of move from that a bit, and I had, you know, it was met with some resistance, and, you know, I had collectors tell me that they're going to pass and wait for a full frontal, you know, because because that's become kind of the currency in a way. And, you know, I find myself now in a very strange position that I actually haven't quite figured out what to make out of all of it, because it's who I am is not something I'm trying to deny, you know, at all, like, you know, or it's not that I'm ashamed, but I would hope that one day maybe I could also be free to explore everything, but yeah. You know.
Well, you are, though, and you should be. And that's totally reductive and pathetic of those collectors or anyone who said that to you. It's totally unacceptable because your paintings are so brilliant and so strong. And that's what I was kind of referencing before about the work of the facade, like the door, the window, the skull. Like those paintings are so extraordinarily exquisite, and they're just incredibly powerful paintings. I mean, it's just ludicrous that people wouldn't, I mean, but you know what? Sometimes when you start doing something ahead of everyone else, then it takes stupid people a longer time to catch up. Because honestly, I think, you know, please continue just doing what you do and following your heart, because the paintings you're making are without doubt extraordinary.
But it must play on your mind because you're told that that's what people want. And when you're in a studio, there must be a part of you that's editing your output, or you're going, I'm going to make this, but you know, maybe people won't want to buy this unless I do this one. So then you feel like you're an artist to order in some ways, or you're bending yourself. So I can understand why you're having a bit of a moment trying to digest that.
I have nothing against full frontals.
No, exactly.
But, you know, but it is. Yes, it becomes. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not all that you are. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
I would hope
exactly
that there's more interesting things happening here than just the fact that I have a penis. But and you know, can we talk about paint even?
Exactly, and the form, you know, and the compositions, let's talk about the paint then, because you work in lots and lots and lots of layers. What I love about your practice is that you have so many layers going through the work, so you are allowed as a viewer to see your mistakes, to see your decision changes, that we, and in certain lights we can see all the layers that are in there. That's incredibly important to you, for people to see your process.
Yes, yeah, I work in acrylics, so there's no removing in acrylics. It's only addition. There's no going backwards, which I like. And so it's all there.
Why is that though? Why acrylic and not oil? And why do you want everybody to see everything?
I've always worked in acrylics. It's just always come, you know, more naturally to me. I'm not sure why, but I mean, I think I also am very impatient, and you know, I can't wait for things to dry. So, you know, acrylics, it dries instantly, and I can, if I want to go over it, I can. But it's just always been the way that I work. There's lots of layers and scrubbing and then washes, and you know, and but I just like the idea of just always adding and never removing. And yeah, it works for me.
Are the landscapes imagined, or are they, because you work from photographs for yourself, you take self-portrait photography and you work from them, but with the landscapes, is that all kind of from memory or from all the clouds that you were painting as a kid and in the scenic department?
It's mostly from photographs.
Oh, yeah, it is.
But then there's a bit of, I allow myself you know, some agency and room to play, of course. But yeah, and then, you know, sometimes I will even, you know, there is kind of digital aspect too, where, you know, I'll sometimes like Photoshop two landscapes together or throw in a rainbow or like whatever I need compositionally. If I think something, you know, what needed something in a certain spot or whatever. And then there's always the kind of the superimposition of, you know, a studio photograph of myself, which is taken here. Onto the kind of landscapes, or
and is that friends take them photographs?
Interiors. No, it's just me and myself and a camera, and a remote control.
For me, the landscapes Ross is talking about, there's an element of kind of paradise. There's some kind of like dream element,
utopia,
or hope, like a utopia. Yes. Yeah. Can you speak a bit about that? Because I know in my intro when I said the thing about your bed and the accountant and like and the legitimacy of a mattress in as a space to dream or to create, yes, or to, you know, to love, for passion, for all of these things. Can you speak a bit about hope and utopia and dreams?
I am in the business of dreams, but I mean, I guess you could say, you know, along the lines of hope, you know, kind of every painting is a wish in a way, you know. I paint, you know, what I need to see sometimes, you know, just to imagine whatever, you know, what it would look like to see myself standing even, you know, if that's what the painting is, if it's triumphant or if it's, I don't know, it's a recently a friend of mine was here and, you know, was discussing this line that I use to often create the interior spaces. You know, I'm always kind of playing with this idea of like, how little does it take to create space as well? And often in the interiors, it could be just a line. And yes, we have architecture. And, you know, my friend was saying the line is that takes a lot of confidence. I was kind of like, it becomes a kind of chicken or the egg thing. Does it take confidence to put down the line, or does the line give confidence, kind of thing? So, you know,
what is it then? Painting. What is it?
Yes, it's definitely a bit of both, because sometimes trusting our instincts takes confidence. And yeah.
Well, I like the idea of what you just said about how you paint because it's what you need to see. And again, I guess it goes back to representation and what we're experiencing gallery walls or museums, I guess, but the images that you're creating. We've seen lots of women in the, as you said, you want to insert yourself into the canon of the female nude, but we've not seen many bodies like your female nudes in museums. And it is a part of that, you know, you said you wasn't kind of political in the fact that you're out there rallying, like demonstrating, but within your practice, it is such a important and vital thing to do. But also, is there a feeling of sadness in there that you are having to do, or you feel compelled to do that?
Well, I guess, you know, that's the thing, I guess, where it comes back to, even, you know, I'm not really entirely sure I have a choice, you know, where it is that thing of to be visible for me is to be alive, you know, and I have to stay alive. You know, dying is so cliche.
But painting keeps you alive.
I mean, yes, another cliche, but yes, it's true. Yes, I'm very lucky to have always had my practice. But it's also that sense of, I don't really have a choice other than to be visible, you know, because, and in that sense, you know, being visible is political, you know, for me, at least. I mean, for any woman, really. But yeah. And then, of course, you know, it is so much a part of the work, the self-portraits.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I mean, I find your painting so highly charged. And if you think about, you know, in the way you're describing it, it sounds like from the act of painting, from the act of whether you're painting yourself standing, sitting, you know, looking out of a window, that somehow they give you a strength, a kind of a kind of drive, you know, outside of the work to keep on in a way. So if you look at a work like Intersection, which is like a dagger, I guess, like almost like knife, stuck, a knife, like into the floor. It looked a bit Shakespearean and dramatic to me as well, just the shape of it. But there's something, I love that painting because it's so charged and it's so like, it's so minimal at the same time, but maybe it's not, maybe it's maximal because the way you're describing, which I love, you know, this idea of the full space. Can you talk about that precise work and how that came to exist?
Everyone wants to know how that one came to exist. Well, that knife is still in my wall. That one, it's a kind of a long story.
We love long stories.
So what do you mean? What came first, the idea or the knife happened, then the idea of the painting? Or was the painting idea happening you threw a knife?
Again, it's the chicken or the egg. You know, everyone asks about the knife in my wall. And yes, it was always for the painting, but maybe the impulse had to do with something else. Maybe I wanted to see what's through the wall, but, you know, goes back to the idea of what's behind the closed door in the back of the canvas. Maybe there is no outside of this system that we live in, of this, you know, system of language that, you know, is the foundation of all art and, you know, is about trying to express something, then really it's just a kind of desire to connect. And I may have gone off a little bit.
No, that's what you're driven by, is this desire to connect to many, to connect to people, to our, like, to our community, but to connect to people outside of the community, to connect, you know, to make your presence known, to exist, I guess. You have the exister spirit that you have to exist, and this does exist. And it's like, you know, we've always said this, if it exists on a gallery wall, you can't deny its existence. Sure. And that's what your work is doing for so many.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's also, you know, it's funny, I have this, you know, people ask me when I know a painting is finished, and, you know, it's really just a feeling. And if I had to describe the feeling, it would kind of be like taking a sledgehammer to a wall. And, you know, it's almost like I can be, when I hear that sound, I know that it's finished. And, you know, maybe over the course of my career, I will take down this wall.
So for each painting is like you've got a sledgehammer, and it's a knock on, like a sledge bang on the wall.
It feels like, well, I mean, I guess,
to,
you know,
to that knife.
Yes. I mean, it's funny. I find that the impulse to create is actually very closely tied to the impulse to destroy. Have you ever had the impulse to, like, just wreck your life, you know, or to just break something? You know, I find actually the impulse to pick up a paintbrush is actually very similar to that feeling, except creation is actually so much harder, but the feeling lasts much longer, and you can sell it. So there's that.
Well, in a weird way, it leads to more creation, because one leads to the next, you know, both financially, but also creatively. It's very kind of Scorpio, weirdly. We're in Scorpio season right now, but that idea of like sex and death. I used to work with a musician called Youth, who was in Killing Joke, and he used to be really, when he first met me, he was like, "You're a Scorpio. It's all about sex and death. It's about birth, a birth and destruction, and how closely aligned those two energies are." Even Russell's a Scorpio, actually. But yeah, it's interesting.
And so I guess, you know, it's like, the impulse to pick up the brush, it feels almost very similar than as the impulse to, I don't know, stick a knife in a wall.
Totally.
But is that because you feel like it's a scary place to create the paintings you're creating? So you feel like it's this act of aggression in some ways, or revenge or something with the images?
Yes, I mean, I do want revenge, you know, and it's, yeah, maybe I am seeking revenge in some ways, you know.
To the system, against the system.
Yeah, sure, and maybe centuries of misrepresentation or lack thereof that, have caused a lot of pain in the world. At the same time, you know, it's also sometimes just a desire to make something beautiful, You know, it's quite simply, you know, as cliche as that is as well, you know, I can't deny that I am invested in beauty.
But also that's so powerful, because that, I was just thinking that when you were talking, this idea that like your works have such a tenderness, such a dignity, such a kind of, they're just so elegant as well, and beautiful. That's the only word for them. And it's almost like, you know, when you hear like an opera singer singing a note and then glass starts to shake and you know, the glass might almost shatter. It's almost like there's a sound coming out of your paintings for me that's touching, you know, the core of
that's
us.
That's the charge.
It's kind of like, and it's actually, in a really cheesy way, it's actually kind of a sound of love or something. It's like you cannot stop this love. You know what I mean? Like, it's authentic love. I don't know. There's something so
like
elegant
the Care Bears
and elevated
or something. It's you're radiating love, and it's
I don't know
it's
if
like,
I'm verbalizing
you,
it right.
No, no, I know what you mean. But it's like you're getting, if you get oppression or if you give out love, it's like I'm giving you love back, whatever you're
and
throwing
you love,
at me.
You obviously love yourself and you have respect for yourself, but you love us too. And I feel like, you know, even Russ and I, like, we're both like guys from the UK, you know, we grew up gay and we have a very different, you know, way of looking at the world to the one that you had in the place where you grew up. But I feel like somehow internationally, we're all connected, you know, and it's like, I am connected thanks to your paintings. I think that's what I'm trying to say.
You have a mother quality. Yeah. It's the Mother Earth.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but you
there is something spiritual about it. That's true.
Yeah,
Russ.
Yeah. Well,
can you talk a bit about
that?
That
means it's working.
You have an alter ego of
Mother Earth,
don't you? But it has a different name.
Oh goodness. yes. I mean, I haven't made those in a long time. Yeah, but for a while I was experimenting with video. And I had a persona whose name is Lover Earth. And yeah, and I would write scripts and make these kind of little vignettes that were kind of, they were really poems.
There's one online called You Used Me, Lover Earth 2018, where you're completely green and you're kind of on your knees and you look like you're pregnant and you're talking to the camera, and it could be you're talking about what, you know, humans have done to the earth, but also what, you know, a lover has done to you. It's these messages where you're like, you used me, took what you wanted, left me behind. And it's like, well, that's what we've done with the earth. But then that's what this, whoever this person, this scorned lover has done with Lover Earth as well.
Yeah. So I believe in the end of that video, I kind of also left an invitation to my audience or to, you know, this lover of hers. It was, I forget how the line goes, but it was something like, even, yes, despite everything. I mean, didn't go like this, but the message was sort of like, I'll take you back. you know.
Well, it's a bit like, you know, David Attenborough, when we have these things about the end of the world and we're all going to die. And then at the very end, where you feel completely paralyzed and like, that's it, it's over. He goes, but we can. If we work hard, turn around, and you're like, oh, there is hope. Oh my God, there is hope. So you're giving us hope. You know, there's this dystopian version of the world, but yet your utopian Lover Earth is saying, come back here.
Well, I've always thought that, you know, utopia and dystopia are not mutually exclusive. You know, they can happen simultaneously, you know, and in pockets, I guess you could say. You know, I kind of feel like they're both always happening in, you know, different places at different times. But yeah, I haven't dabbled in video in quite a while.
It's so good, though.
I mean,
it's so good for people listening. Go on to, you know, just Google Nash Glynn films, videos, and there's one that comes up called You Use Me.
Yes,
and then, there's another painting talking about dystopian, which I love, which I don't think you're a fan of from reading between the lines of an interview you did, but it's Self-Portrait with Robot. And it looks like you're getting fucked from behind by a robot from the Jetsons. And I absolutely am obsessed with that painting.
You know, that one is still here in the studio and I've been trying to get rid of it for so long.
I'll take it. I'll live with it. I think it's I think it's fucking amazing. Yes. Where did that come from? Because we're gonna have to post a picture of that. It's you on all fours with a robot behind you.
Yes. I mean, it's funny that one, actually the robot, it came out of like a sketchbook that I found from like high school. There was like this kind of reoccurring figure of this like robot fucking I'm not exactly sure what that was about, but I guess in the painting, you know, I was also kind of just interested in like the contrast between this kind of the figure of the robot and myself. And
I love it.
I've put that one down.
One of the things I loved about the recent show as well was the use of fabric. So you would present in the paintings either behind the window, you know, a kind of a folded curtain, you know, with all the creases and very like an old master kind of, you know, the folds in fabric. And often in old master paintings, you would see really luscious velvet or something creased and folded. And then the shadows connected. And it got me thinking a lot because the show was called Interiors. But if you think of the painting It, and then even the one of the portrait of her in the red dress, you know, with the bed sheets, but also the kind of very you know, a strong red in that fabric. Can you talk a bit about those folds?
It's funny. Well, those two paintings were actually, they were made together and like sort of go together in a way. I mean, again, it was like contrast It and her between the human and the non-human kind of. You know, and for those listening, It was kind of a still life of two apples in a glass bowl, like sitting on top of a stool covered in fabric. And then hers is a self-portrait of me on the bed. In a red dress, and the dress, and that one technically was, it was just pure hue, that good old cadmium, which we can't find anymore. They stopped. You can't find it in stores anymore.
Because
it's such a strong color, isn't it?
Because
it's
so color.
Vivid. Apparently,
was
it toxic?
But I was like, I was like searching the internet to like on eBay and things to see if anyone had some stores of cadmium, but it's hard to find now. Now they have this like cadmium medium something, but it's not the same.
It's a kind of orangey red, isn't it? It's like this very vivid, vibrant color.
Those two was really, you know, again, it was kind of this contrast between, you know, the figure and the object. I mean, and then again, you know, I've always had a hard time seeing the difference between subjects and objects, and sometimes that gets me into trouble, but it's, you know, it was kind of a play on that. And the fabric kind of just added a softness or kind of seductive quality.
Because religious.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, like an offering or like, you know, like the velvet you'd see in a church or the kind of fabric you'd see in the Vatican or something. It has that sort of energy. What do you mean it got you into trouble then between subject and object in the past? In what way?
Like with- I mean, it's a slippery slope if you think about it. You know, in some sense, it's like maybe objects, you know, deserve a little more respect, you know, because, yes, there's this whole sense of, I mean, I'm quite literally objectifying myself with every painting, but maybe objects, you know, are getting a bad reputation, and, you know, maybe, you know, we could treat objects a little better. And that even goes back to the sense of the way we, you know, have treated the planet, you know, in the sense of, you know, maybe, I don't know, objects like rivers or lakes or, you know, mountains also deserve, you know, more a sort of subjecthood.
What are you working towards now? What's next then? So this show's about to close in Villmeter in LA.
The show is about to close in Villmeter in LA, and honestly, I'm kind of just I don't have anything on the books. I'm single, if anyone's out there, you know, and wants to come to the studio. I'm always working, you know, I'm always on to the next.
Do you work in bodies of work? Like say you've had the interior show now, do you feel like now you're exploring a different body of work, or do you always bring in the landscapes, bring in the interiors now, and these are all part of your language?
These are all part of my language. I'm still working in that kind of mode of interiors and exteriors and windows and doorways and architecture and object and subjecthood and all these things. I've been playing a bit more with abstractions. Again, it's something I've never really been able to see the difference between representation and abstraction. You know, I think it's all a part of, this system of language that we find ourselves in. And,
And minimalism with
contrasting. Minimalism, you know, is something I'm very interested in. And But, you know, it's always one to the next for me. I can't plan too far ahead.
If you think about the abstraction side, so you mentioned collage was something that you did, you know, if you weren't taking photos as a kid, you were making collages. Can you talk a bit about how that's continued or inspired the way that you see image making?
I guess in some ways I still kind of am collaging because, you know, I'm putting together, you know, images that I'm taking from landscapes and then studio photographs and then things from my dreams and composing them all in ways that, you know, I think they're kind of these like impossible spaces that yet still hold form, which is always something I'm interested in playing with as well. If you really look closely, like they actually don't make any sense. It's almost like she could just fall through the landscape at any point, or, you know, it's really just one line that's holding together this whole kind of sense of interior space. It's always something I'm playing with. I don't know. I guess it's a sense of exploration too that I'm looking for. And, you know, I feel like a work is successful if I've discovered something, you know, and then again, you know, that's really just can be a feeling. So,
I mean, there's a portrait that you made of yourself in a while back now. It's like a photo montage and it's called Automata. And in that work, you're looking into a mirror and you can see your body from the back, but you have this kind of like, collaged element in the kind of spinal area, almost like a kind of bustier or something. Like can you talk a bit about how that kind of body of work happened?
Yeah, I mean, that was really just a one-time thing.
Oh, I see.
I experimented in college. Okay. Yeah, I was experimenting a bit with photography and montage and photoshopping, you know, which I think still plays a lot into the way that I paint.
Yeah, definitely. Because you can really feel that in that image. Like if you look at the recent paintings you've made, the way the body sits in space, you know, the mirror, the object, like the black space surrounding, which in the painting became white space. You know, it's very connected for me. But I love the spine as well. It's like what is that? It's almost like an instrument or something.
It was something I built out of like plumbing materials and then photographed and kind of photoshopped in.
I think it's extraordinarily beautiful that
thank you.
Definitely relates to the more recent work.
So before we get onto our final questions, you were in London recently for Freeze Art. What was that like for you? What are your thoughts and feelings on the art fair? And
it was my first time in London. I have to say, loved London. Like, I love a good fish and chips. And I loved the bus. You guys have a great public transportation system.
Thank you.
The tube was not my favorite, but the bus was great. I loved sitting up top on the front. And they were clean and efficient. And I was there for Freeze. It was sort of by chance. I was in Paris for Fashion Week for a friend's show. And then another friend was going to London for Freeze. And, you know, I looked at the map and I was like, oh, it's right there. Like, you know, I might as well tag along. And I have a painting up at the Tate Modern, which I also wanted to go see.
You have one in the collection.
I do, yes.
Oh, yeah. Congratulations. That's great. What's that called? And is that on display now?
Yes, it's on display now. It's up indefinitely, I believe, part of the rehang. And it's a piece called Self-Portrait with One Foot Forward and One Hand Reaching Out.
And you're facing back towards us, the audience, like beckoning us into the landscape.
Exactly.
That's part of the Tate collection. Yes. Congratulations. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
So what did that feel like to see it in the Tate?
Oh, it was strange. To see it there behind glass for all the world to see. Yeah, it was really something to see it there. And of course, you know, I was there at Freeze and, you know, wound up going over there with like three friends, and then like my cousin and his baby came, and the three curators are there and the baby's screaming for joy, and we're all there seeing the painting, and it was kind of perfect.
Who are you hanging near? Do you know who the other artists are that are around you in the
It's me in the room it's me and Lyle Ashton Harris.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's like one of his big, how do you call it when there's like five photos in a,
like a triptych, something like that.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And this is the Tate Modern's new hang.
Yes. Yes.
Fantastic. Yeah. This is really, I didn't know that. That's so exciting. Yeah. I'm going to go and check that out.
Yeah, go check it out. Yeah, it's a great museum.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. So you like our buses and you like our museums. Like good. Well, that sounds like the best time.
I'll come with you, Russ. We have to go together.
Yeah, we get a photo with it.
The other thing I really want to quickly ask you before we wrap up, Nash, is why is drawing as well so important for you? Because the drawings that I've seen by you are very intense drawings. They're almost, you kind of fill the whole surface of the paper in a way that the paintings maybe you make kind of less marks somehow. Like there's a, I think there's a different relationship between the two things somehow, the two mediums.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. There's a different relationship. And at the same time, you know, working in acrylic is actually a lot like drawing in the way that I work anyway. You know, it's a lot of, it's similar formally. But yeah, I mean, drawing has always been a part of my practice. It's definitely more portable. I take it with me on the go and here in the studio. But I wonder, which drawings are you thinking of?
I think it's the ones of your face, like the just self-portrait drawings. Yeah, they're the ones that I gravitated towards.
For like old masters in some way.
Yeah, they're just, I think they're breathtaking, actually. Yeah. I really love them. Yeah, I think you've got an amazing line. And it's really, I think drawing is one of the hardest things to do. And it's a way to really see someone's like personality and their language and who they are, you know, because... I don't
There's
know,
more
so
touch.
Than other mediums. Yeah, there is, exactly. Yes, there is a lot more touch. Yeah. Yes. You know, in a recent episode we had with an actor called Zachary Quinto, who Russell recently acted
Zachary's
with in American
wonderful.
Horror Story.
Yes.
Zachary highlighted your work to us. And I know that he actually bought one of your paintings recently as well, which he's really proud of and he's really happy.
He's
what's it? Have you met collectors like Zach? And what's it like when you meet your collectors? Is it a nice
I don't think there's any collectors like Zach. Yeah, no, he's been wonderful. But yes, there are a lot of great people out there to work with, for sure.
Do you like meeting the people that end up living with your work?
I do. I love meeting the people that live with my work. I mean, I love meeting people in general, but, everyone's just so interesting. And,
You're interesting, Nash. You're fascinating.
I know, you're making me want to fly to New York. Yeah. I want to come to the seaport.
Well, the fact that you've got a studio now and you're single and you want a visitor, then I might come and see you and we can hang out with the sailors in the pub downstairs. That'd be the dream. The dream.
We love you, Nash, so much.
So we ask every guest that comes on three very important questions. The first one is, if you could do an art heist, you could steal any work of art in the world for yourself to live with, what would it be and why?
You know, it's funny, I don't actually like living with art.
What?
There's no art in my apartment.
Wow.
Yes, I mean, I love art, obviously, but like, you know, I mean, my studio is in my home and, you know, I spend all day thinking about form and composition and color and line and da da da. And, you know, sometimes a girl just needs a break.
Like, fair enough.
You know, there's really no clocking out of my job. And so there's no art in my bedroom.
Oh, wow.
So this might be the first time in history that we've had a non-art heist. You're not going to steal anything.
Art.
What about stealing something and giving it to the Tate? Or an artist that you love, an artist friend of yours, like one of your peers that you're like, their work should be in the Tate.
Okay, you know what? A piece I would love to have, actually, is a Claude Cahun photograph.
Oh, yeah.
I love him.
Oh, so amazing.
Also,
you know what's great about them, Nash, is they're tiny.
They're tiny. Exactly.
And actually, so it wouldn't take up too much of your wall space.
Tell us a bit about Claude Cahun, that they were an artist in France, non-binary artist, photographer.
Yes. I just loved, I love the photographs to begin with, just, you know, the way they look. But I also I loved the story of Claude's role on, what was the island that they were living on during the war, during World War II?
Oh, yeah.
I want to say Haiti, but that's not right.
No.
Jersey.
Yes.
I think it's St. Helier.
Yeah,
St. Like Helens or Helier.
Helier.
Yes, and was there when it was occupied and was doing all this like very sneaky art and, you know, making these little montages that were these sort of, you know, very anti-war propaganda, and would like go to the bar and like slip them into the coats of the Nazis and, you know, leave things like lying around, and was doing all this very kind of subversive, but very subtle kind of like artworks around the town until the end of the war when they were arrested for the propaganda, and then I think shortly after the war ended or something, and he was freed, but spent some time in prison because of it. But I just love the way that, you know, he was kind of extending a hand to the opposition in a sense, you know, like it was kind of making art for the Nazis, you know, and not just kind of like speaking to, I don't know, I guess that's something I think about too, you know, if I could, beyond the desire to make a pretty picture, I don't know, like create some change in the world potentially by kind of, I don't know, like giving, yeah, making something that would, I don't know, maybe make someone feel something like empathy. Yes.
Yeah, like encouraging the opposition to open their hearts
in a way, yeah,
change the way they see things. And actually it was a really brave, bold, provocative act at the time, you know.
Quads,
even just to,
dangerous,
dangerous, revolutionary, powerful,
but also like how amazing to this idea,
and it's so great that Claude's through the work lives on, you know, like we're even talking about him now, it's like it's major.
Well, I also like have like a, you know, a kind of star-crossed crush on him, so
I know Gillian Waring, who just had the show at Guggenheim in New York, was also really inspired by Claude Cahun. I think the reach has been far. So the other question we ask every guest is, what is your favorite color?
Well, I have two favorite colors.
Do you?
Yes, and I've never been able to decide. This has been a problem since I remember elementary school when, you know, people would be like, what's your favorite color? And I could never choose. So I'd always say blue and pink, which I know is very, you know, says a lot about me. But I just think they're great colors and they go great together.
Yeah, they do, actually. It's true.
Yeah.
Why do people try and separate them all the time?
What is the best advice you've ever had when it comes to your art?
Oh, goodness. I don't know. People have always told me what not to do. But I don't know. Inspire people. Like, I guess it's not really advice, but
what have you been told not to do then? What have people said, don't do this?
Oh, everything that I do, I've been told not to do. I've been told to stop painting so many times, but
by who? Just like trolls or
sure, yes, you know, just yeah, you know, it's something I get now and then.
But, we're very happy you didn't stop painting.
Yes. I'll never stop.
Good. Good news.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, long live the Queen. That's what we want. That's what we want.
Yes, you know, yes, the brand is living. So,
it is. Well, this has been brilliant.
It's been so magic.
So brilliant. Thank you so much for blessing us with your time and
your paintings.
Works. I mean, yeah, incredible. And we're going to go and check out the Tate in London. And you've got a great website. You describe yourself in there as a Nash Glean is a transdisciplinary artist, which is which I love the fact it's just very, very clever, and love it. So your website's brilliant, your Instagram is excellent, so everybody get following. What is your Instagram?
Nash Glean.
That's him.
We'll definitely be linking as well.
Yes, and for all images go to @talkart on Instagram, where we'll be posting everything we're talking about today, and we will see you again very soon. So thank you very much, everyone. Thanks, Nash.
Thanks,
Nash. We'll be back very soon. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diamond and Russell Tovey.
Follow us on Instagram at Talk Art, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in today's episode, with music by Jack Northover.
Subscribe to Talk Art at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever it is that you get your podcasts.
Give us a rating and write us a comment. Thanks for listening.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.